Welcome back to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm Steven Miranda. On Monday, January 5th, 2014, episode 10.38, the Wild Card Recap Show, also known as the Voice All Your Conspiracy Theory Show. An NFL owner plans to build a stadium in L.A. I say bring it, and I'm ready. Ron Rivera and his family get a scare in the Charlotte area. Who says they're done coaching? Find out. Plus, the Saints have a good old boy. I'll also discuss the four wildcard games, including the controversial flag, non-flag in the Lions-Cowboys game. And look who's making an appearance on Celebrity Apprentice. Plus, Gareth apologizes to all you fans as his picks went down in flames, making me...
I am the smartest man alive!
That's right. Let's chomp it in! Continuing to bring American football to the world, it's Steven Miranda with NFL Rants and Raves. What a weekend of football, people. It was fantastic. Wherever and however you are listening to the show right now, thank you very much for joining me again. Well, I'm Steven Miranda. First off, before I get on to Shay, I just want to throw a booyah out there in honor of Stuart Scott. He passed away yesterday, just before all of the games were wrapping up in the NFL. We heard that the great voice of ESPN SportsCenter, someone who I grew up listening to and watching on SportsCenter, passed away, lost his battle with cancer. And if you were following me on Twitter during the playoff games, you saw a lot of booyah touchdowns, and those were all in honor of a guy that, like I said, I grew up watching, and it's sad to see him go. Sorry that he lost his life to cancer, but he didn't really lose it. As he said, he lived it. He lived hard. He worked hard. He played hard. Seeing some of the, people, other celebrities, other broadcasters talking about Stuart Scott, just how hard he had it over the last several years when he was battling with cancer. But he didn't let it show. He was still come on in front of the camera, do his thing. And as I said, he brought hip-hop and coolness to sports broadcasting and made sportscasters cool. And that's definitely something that he brought to the table. He was an innovator, and he will be missed. And you will probably always hear that booyah and cool as the other side of the pillow and representing your kinfolk like Pookie and Nene and Shaniqua and all those great catchphrases that he would use when he was breaking down the sports that he so loved and that you and I loved. I just wanted to say, tip my hat to Stuart Scott. You will be missed, man. You will be missed. And I hope that we can continue to honor you with the tributes by continuing to use your catchphrases. And I will tell you that today I may be throwing in some cooler sides of the pillow when I'm talking about some of those games. First off, in NFL news, I would like to say that I'm excited. Finally, it looks like we have a plan in place to bring a team to Los Angeles. I say give it up because that is absolutely good news, and I just like it. Stan Kroenke, owner of the St. Louis Rams, who recently bought 60 acres in Inglewood, California last year, has joined forces with the Stockbridge Capital Group. They own the Hollywood Park site, which is about a 200 and almost 300 acre piece of land where the old horse racing site was. The horse races stopped there about in 2013. Well, this group together plans to build an 80,000-seat NFL stadium along with other retail, office, and residential spaces. And this was broken down. This was according to the LA Times. A good friend of the show, Sam Farmer, who wrote the story. Inglewood, as you know, is the site of the old Forum, where the Los Angeles Lakers used to play. But ever since the Rams and the Raiders left LA in 1994, it's just, you know, been kind of like no teams coming, no teams coming. Well, now here comes an owner who's merged with this company, and they're joining forces to build the stadium. No tax dollars are going to be involved, so there's going to be no vote. You don't have to worry about spending money on the stadium if you live in Los Angeles. This owner's going to reach into his pockets and put together this stadium deal, put it up, and then hopefully if, you know, the Inglewood developers get the approval, they have to go through some processes, they could then make Kroenke say that it's time that the St. Louis Rams leave St. Louis and become the Los Angeles Rams again. Right now, all the NFL has to say is that there is no team that has applied for relocation, so there will be no relocations for the 2015 season. But any decisions on relocations in 2016 is later is subject to approval by all 32 clubs, and that isn't going to be coming for, you know, a while. If Stan Kroenke builds the stadium and next year applies for relocation because St. Louis doesn't want to build him a stadium and, you know, they declined comment on the story. But if they don't build him a stadium and he goes ahead and builds this stadium in Los Angeles, in Inglewood, and has it ready to go, then next year, before the deadline, he will apply to move, and if it gets approved, as early as 2016, the Rams could be playing in Los Angeles. They would play in a temporary home, such as the Coliseum or the Rose Bowl. And then by 2018, the stadium would be open and they would have their new permanent home. I am all for this. I hope it happens just like Sam Farmer says in his article. And that would mean that football would be back in Los Angeles in 2016. And that would be a great sight to see. So I'm excited that the story is even out there right now, and no one's denying it. You know, Kroenke's not denying it. The developers aren't denying it. Stockbridge Capital Group isn't denying it. So it seems right now that this could really happen. And finally, after, 20 years of no teams in the Los Angeles area, we can finally have a football team back here in the second biggest market in the United States. So I'm very happy about that, as you can hear from my passion. Bring it, Kroenke. I will maybe even cheer for your team. I don't know if I'll do that, but I will go to games. I will cover games. That would be awesome. So bring the Rams. I just want a team here in Los Angeles again. That would be fantastic. Okay, Ron Rivera and his family. Ron Rivera, head coach of the Carolina Panthers, you know, should be happy for him. His Panthers got a win. They beat the Arizona Cardinals in the playoffs. Well, he goes home, and apparently he and his family, first before I continue, he and his family are fine, but his family suffered through, there was a fire in his house in the Charlotte area. Fire department said that the early indications was that the start of the fire was accidental, but it took them about an hour to extinguish the fire. It was a huge house. There's a lot of damage to the roof and the attic area. Fortunately, and thank goodness for Ron and his family, they're all fine. They're all safe. No one was injured, but it was scary. It's scary because, you know, the Carolina Panthers right now are just, they're just trying to keep their team together, you know. Cam Newton just rolled his truck over like five times or however many times on the that major car accident that he had to miss a game. It was back on the field, get him a win. Now they have the probably horrible task of going all the way to the Pacific Northwest to play Seattle on Saturday. you know, no one's expecting much from Carolina in that game, but, you know, now that they can at least breathe a sigh of relief that no one in Ron's family was hurt during this fire and that all is well. Talking about coaching and coaches, there is a coach right now who had been going around interviewing, and there's a lot of coaches. If you don't know, get out to NFL.com. They've got a coaches tracker telling you who's interviewing where, when. You know, the offensive coordinator of the Kansas City Chiefs is interviewing for the Jets job, and Rex Ryan's interviewing for the Niners and for the Falcons. And, you know, you just want to know who all is interviewing where. Go out, NFL.com. They've got all that information with their coaches tracker. But Mike Holmgren says he's done coaching. The only job, he said, that he was interested in was the San Francisco 49ers job. He was interested in possibly coaching Kaepernick, you know, and filling in for the departed Jim Harbaugh. But he said that the 49ers were not interested. And so that, he is it. It is done. He is not coaching anymore. He's done coaching. Apparently, there's a report that the Oakland Raiders asked to interview him, and he turned them down. And Holmgren, who you know him from his Packers days and the Seahawks days, pretty good coach. He just decided to call it quits. I'll believe it when I see it, because he had said that you know he was semi-retired. Well, now he's saying he's retired, and he's done. That is interesting, and I'm sure there's some teams there that aren't very happy about that. Now, it's been a while before you've heard this, but here it is.
Just a good old boy.
You know he's just a good old boy.
Never meaning no harm.
The dude never means no harm.
Beats all you never saw. Been in trouble with the
law since the day he was born. New Orleans Saints linebacker Junior Gallette just doesn't know how to keep his calm, apparently. He was arrested Monday in a domestic violence case in which a woman said her face was scratched and her ear was bloodied after an earring was ripped off her ear. Gallette was booked with a misdemeanor simple battery stemming from the disturbance at his home in Kenner, a suburb of New Orleans. There's no charges right now, but the prosecutors could later bring some charges against Gallette. All I'm saying is that, man, after a season that the NFL has had, after a year where there have been so many altercations already, this is just not good. This is not good, but here you go. Here comes the NFL. They're going to be looking at this closely. They're going to take a look at the investigation. I'm not sure how bad it was, because bail was only set for at $600. I mean, I think it was $602 was the bail set for his release, which obviously he was able to pay and get out. He was released. No lawyer appeared for Gallette, but you know, the policy as it's written, or as at least how I understand it, is that for any violation involving assault, battery, domestic violence, dating violence, child abuse, or any other forms of family violence or sexual assault, 6 games without pay. 6 games. So if it comes out, it's true, it was Gallette, he scratched her, he ripped an earring out of her ear, 6 games. Why would you risk that? I don't believe I have ever been that upset at somebody that I could not just walk away. And simply just walk away and be like, you know what? You're not worth it. It's not worth it. It's not worth me getting suspended 6 games in the NFL. I'm going to walk away. I'm going to go get my cool. Then I'll come back and I'll be like, you know what? You don't got to go home, but you got to get up out of here. Right? That's what he should have said. He couldn't do that. Now he's involved in this case, and he's looking at a possible 6-game suspension with the new domestic violence policy that the NFL has put out. Something to look out there for the New Orleans Saints. right now the Saints aren't saying much other than that they are aware of the situation and that they're gathering more information before they make a statement. But, you know, with the new code of conduct that was implemented over this past season, because of all the other drama that has happened in the NFL, Gallet is looking at about 6 games to be suspended. Could be more. Depends on all what goes out with this particular case. I'm a little disappointed. I just got to say, I'm a little disappointed that guys in the NFL have yet to learn that it's not cool to put your hands on another person in a physical manner where you're trying to hurt somebody. Just not good. Not good at all. All right, before I start with the games, this is kind of a side story that's a little fun. It's not really NFL newsworthy. It does have a former NFL player, Celebrity Apprentice. You know that show where the dude with the hair, Donald Trump, he does his little snake and he says, "You're fired." You know that show? Well, it does a celebrity version called Celebrity Apprentice. Guess who's doing that show right now? None other than T.O. Terrell Owens dropping by to be a contestant on Celebrity Apprentice. That's how far. I guess the reason why I'm talking about this is just to show just how far T.O. has fallen from grace. He has come so far down. He's so bad that he has to make appearances on crummy shows like The Celebrity Apprentice. The only reason why he is on that show is because there's a paycheck involved that he so desperately, desperately needs. Once again, Terrell Owens on Celebrity Apprentice. The commercial that I saw with him and Gilbert Gottfried, you know, Gilbert Gottfried, the guy that talks in the annoying voice. That was a bad Gottfried, but that's how bad Gottfried is. T.O. tries to kind of impersonate him, and he did it probably even worse than I did. And I just said, Terrell Owens, look at that, making an appearance. I could tell you some stories about T.O. and why he needs money so much, but since he is no longer in the NFL, we will just move on. And before I get to breaking down the games, Gareth Busby, who was talking smack on Facebook, his picks were great, put his picks up against mine. Not a good week for the fans. Not only did you lose the challenge game and make me...
I am the smartest man alive!
Gareth went 1-3 to start the playoff season. And I'm not going to brag or anything, but I was a perfect 4-0. Yes, some of those were a little tight and they was a little closer than I would have liked. But 4-0, I will take it, especially on Wild Card Weekend when, you know, so many crazy things happen on Wild Card Weekend. And I just happy that I was right on it and finished the week at perfect 4-0. I got to tell you, though, people, fans, it is running out. The challenge game, which I will get to, it's the third game we'll talk about. I did win it. That makes the challenge game score 10-8 with just 3 weekends to go. So if I win one more game and make it 11-8, it's over. The fans will not be able to catch me. And with the championship games and the Super Bowl coming up, it's a possibility that fans will pick the same as me and you won't be able to catch me. So, but you won't be able to catch me for sure if I win one more week. So I think you all should confer, figure out who it is you want to go against me for divisional round, because I feel I'm on fire. I am looking to go another perfect 4-0 again. I think I've already got my picks. I'm pretty certain who I am going to take, and I'm very comfortable with those picks. I feel that I could go 4-0 again. So bring it, people. I've already gotten a submission of a couple people who want to go against me. We'll see who we pick. But if you want to go against me this coming weekend, feel free to submit your name and your picks, because you've got to bring it. It is almost done. I've almost nailed the final nail in the coffin. That's exactly right. I've almost hammered home the final nail in the coffin with one more win. Let's start with the Arizona Cardinals traveling to Carolina to face the Panthers. And I was trying to tell Gareth, and he just wouldn't listen to me. I was telling him that Arizona, as good as their defense is played, cannot go on the road with a third-string quarterback and beat the Carolina Panthers. That's why I took Carolina at home. It's not that I think they're a powerhouse. I just think Arizona with a third-string quarterback looked horrific on offense. How bad were they? They only managed 77 yards. 77 yards on offense. Total. In another game, the Detroit Lions went 99 yards on one drive to score a touchdown. Arizona was held to 77 yards. Now, yeah, they had like almost 100 yards. And on the final play, they lost like 19 or 20 yards, something like that, to finish with a measly 77 yards. That was awful. Ryan Lindley, there is a reason you are a third-string quarterback. And that's all I had to say for the Arizona Cardinals. It was bad. The only reason Arizona had 16 points to begin with is because one of those touchdowns, you had a little number 11 for Carolina, number 11 wannabe Cole Beasley with the gold locks coming out of his helmet, trying to return a punt. He fumbled. What's the dude's name? Brenton Burzin, rookie from Wolford College. He muffed a punt and gave Arizona the ball literally right there by the end zone, like I think their own 18 or 19. Arizona then scored on a one-yard pass to Fells from Ryan Lindley. Later on, they got a Grice one-yard run that was overturned and was initially called a fumble. And then they reviewed it and saw that he crossed the plane before he lost the ball. And those were the 14 points they scored in the second quarter. And if you look at it, they had a one-point lead going into halftime. It was 14-13. And that's all they could muster. In the second half, they did nothing. They got a safety at the end because there was like 9 seconds. And the Carolina Panther decided to kind of run around. I'm sure that's what he was told. Run around, get, you know, try and use up all the clock, and then get out of bounds and give up a safety. That's what he tried to do. That's exactly what he did. I'm sure there were some people in Las Vegas who were very happy about that safety, if you know what I mean. Wink, wink. Because it made it go over, actually. That's exactly what that safety did. It wasn't going to be over until that safety happened. 27-16, the final score. Carolina just had enough. They had enough. They weren't fantastic. Cam Newton only threw for 198 yards. He had two touchdown passes, but one was to Fozzie Whitaker, who took it to the house 39 yards on a little screen pass. And he threw a pick. And I think he also had a fumble. So it wasn't Newton's best game, but I told you that Jonathan Stewart was going to run. I think one of the things that Gareth said as one of the reasons why he was not taking the Carolina Panthers is that they had no running game. But Jonathan Stewart showed that he was good enough. I think he rushed for about 123 yards. He scored a touchdown on the ground, and it was good enough. Good enough. And on defense, they were stifling. They got after Arizona. They couldn't run the ball. They got after Lindley, forced him into two interceptions. Luke Kuechly, I mean, the dude was phenomenal. He played a great game, had a pick, tipped one that eventually got intercepted. He was all over the field. And the Carolina Panthers, coming in with a losing record of 7-8-1, not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. Nobody expected much of them. They were able to get the job done. Now they have the horrible task of going all the way to Seattle to play the Seattle Seahawks. If they can control the game by running the football with Stewart and Williams and Tolbert and Fozzie, and those guys can run the football, and they could get after Russell Wilson the way they got off to Lindley, they might be able to keep that game close, and they might be able to get tight, and that's good. That might become a good ball game. If they can't do that, they're going to get blown out. But if they can keep it tight with their defense, that's going to be a good game. Congratulations to Cam Newton and Ron Rivera and the Carolina Panthers. The second time that this has happened in the history of the NFL, a team with a losing record hosts a team with a much better record, and the team with the losing record has won. Carolina just did it to Arizona in 2010. The Seattle Seahawks, who got into the playoffs with a 7-9 record, they beat the then defending Super Bowl champion New Orleans Saints up in Seattle. So for, I guess, all of us, myself included, who keeps yelling and saying, oh my God, why are we letting this 7-8-1 team who won this lousy division host a playoff game? Well, there you go. I mean, they pulled off the win. I guess the NFL isn't going to be changing its decision anytime soon when you've got teams with losing records continuing to win in the playoffs and make massive, massive strides in the playoffs. So we'll give it up there, and now we'll move to Pittsburgh, where the Pittsburgh Steelers hosted the Baltimore Ravens. Oh, my gosh, those tricky, tricky Pittsburgh Steelers. All I had to know about this game was, is Le'Veon Bell playing? The minute I heard no, I said Baltimore Ravens win. The Steelers couldn't do anything. They got in close. They couldn't run. They couldn't punch it in. They couldn't do what they needed to get the score. They had to settle in the first half, settle for field goal after field goal after field goal. They had no Le'Veon Bell. Look, I don't want to make an excuse for the Pittsburgh Steelers. They still have to go out and play the football game with whoever they have. Look, Arizona did it, and I could very easily have made an excuse for the Cardinals. They were on their third-string quarterback, but I didn't. They still had to go out and play the game. Here come the Pittsburgh Steelers. They had to go out and play the game against the division rival, and I think they had a bad draw. This is a team that you're getting ready to play for the third time in the season. You split the season games, two games that you played, but this is a team that knows you very well, and you are not going to have the guy that accounted for about 58-59% of your total offense running the ball with Le'Veon Bell. He's not available to you. The Steelers tried to bring in Ben Tate. They tried to run with him early. It looked like they might find some success, but the Baltimore Ravens shut down quickly. They had no answer for it. They also had no answer for Steve Smith Sr. The 35-year-old dude continues to do it. I only had 5 catches, but they went for 101 yards. That's an average of 20.2 yards per catch. That's unreal for a guy that is 35 years old. He still brings in, he's what, like 5'11 and a half, if that. Congratulations to the Baltimore Ravens. They still know how to do it. They still know how to win once they get in the playoffs. This is a team that I felt kind of sneaked and backed into the playoffs. But once you're in the playoffs, doesn't matter how you got there. They took care of business. And I will tell you one other thing. There is a team in New England that of all the teams in the AFC that made the playoffs, the last team they wanted to see come to Foxborough was the Baltimore Ravens. They're going to deny it, and every New England Patriots fan will deny it, but I guarantee you they would have much rather seen Pittsburgh win that game and have the Steelers the Indianapolis Colts come into Foxborough, anybody but the Baltimore Ravens, because one, the Ravens get scary good in the playoffs. Flacco has been scary good in New England. They've already beaten New England twice in the playoffs in New England. So this is not the matchup that Belichick and the New England Patriots wanted to see. And if the Ravens can get after Tom Brady the way they got after Roethlisberger and hit him time after time after time again, I think The Ravens sacked Roethlisberger five times. Five times they sacked him, and they kept hitting him time and time again. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough for the Patriots. But hats off to Harbaugh. He certainly knows how to get the most out of his players in the playoffs. They always play big for him. Terrell Suggs with an interception that he catches between his knees. That was pretty amazing. So Justin Forsett didn't run much, but he ran hard. He rushed hard. And once again, Owen Daniels, another name that not a lot of people were expecting much of. Four catches for 70 yards. They just took it. They just took it to the Pittsburgh Steelers. And the Steelers had no answer without Le'Veon Bell there to run the football for them. I think they got 25 yards from Harris and 19 yards from Ben Tate. And that's just not getting done. Not going to get it done when you had a guy who was the second leading rusher in the NFL for the Pittsburgh Steelers not playing the game. The final there, Baltimore 30, Pittsburgh 17. It was close throughout the game up until the end of the third quarter, where the Ravens started to kind of pull away, and they made it 30-9 at one point. The Steelers got a touchdown and two-point conversion late in the game, and that's all there was. That's all there was. They just didn't have enough in them to get it done, and the Ravens know how to play in the playoffs. One other note, John Harbaugh had his brother Jim Harbaugh on the sidelines. He originally had his Michigan gear, but by the time the game started, he had put on Baltimore Raven black, so he was there giving his brother support. He looked a little cold, and I just got to say, Mr. Harbaugh, you're coaching Michigan. It gets a lot colder than that, dog. It gets a lot colder than that there, something that we'll have to see. And that takes us through Saturday. Coming to Sunday, where Sunday morning, the Cincinnati Bengals travel to Indianapolis Colts to face the Colts. They traveled to Indianapolis Colts, huh? They traveled to Indianapolis to face the Colts. The Cincinnati Bengals with their magical 10 points in the playoffs. That's all they could muster. 26-10 was the final. Indy got the win. I just look, once again, I guess this could be a theme throughout the show. I don't want to make excuses for the Bengals, but no A.J. Green, who suffered a concussion the week before. No Jermaine Gresham at tight end. Those two guys caught 69% of the touchdown passes from Andy Dalton during the regular season. That's a lot of touchdown passes. They're not on the field. Then Ray Maluga gets injured early on in the game, so he's not there for the defense. That changes things, because it changed things so much that the Boom Heron looked like a beast for the Indianapolis Colts. I mean, he became their go-to guy. He had 10 catches for 85 yards, had another 56 yards on the ground, scored a touchdown on the ground. He was Andrew Luck's go-to guy. There was that one touchdown pass with Andrew Luck had someone draped on him. He's falling to the ground. Chucks it about 35 yards in the air to Moncrief for a touchdown. That play was ridiculous. And Andy Dalton had nothing. He was 18 of 35 for 155 yards, no TDs, and he just looked bad. Why did he look so bad? He had nobody to throw the football to. Nobody. Here are the five guys that caught passes from him. Giovanni Bernard, his running back out of the backfield, caught 8 passes for 46 yards. Hewitt, Burkhead, Sanu, and Brock. You know why I say their last names? Because I don't know their first names. Okay, I know Mohamed Sanu. But seriously, folks, Ryan Hewitt, a tight end. All right. Rex Burkhead, the fullback coming out of the backfield. Kevin Brock, another tight end. Mohamed Sanu, the only wide receiver to catch a pass from Andy Dalton. And it weren't very many passes. He only caught 3 for 31 yards. He had no one. And everybody and their dog is going to say, oh, Andy Dalton, He's not a very good quarterback. I don't know why the Cincinnati Bengals keep him around. He's never really good in the playoffs. He's 0-4. He's tied Warren Moon for the most consecutive playoff losses to start a career, because Warren Moon was 0-4 too, and you know, it's just not very good. He's good in the regular season, but you get him to the playoffs and he's nothing, man. He's nothing. You should get rid of him. He had nobody to throw the ball to. Do you understand that? He had 69% of his touchdown passes players out of the game. I'm sorry. You're just not. Go ahead and blame him. If you want to blame anybody, blame Marvin Lewis, the head coach, because in these 4 years where the Cincinnati Bengals have made four playoffs in a row and they've had four first-round exits in a row, they've looked bad. They have looked the same every year in the playoffs, and especially in the second half, they can't get anything done. If you need a change, I'm saying maybe let's give Andy Dalton another year to see what he can do with a healthy team on the football field, and let's maybe look at Marvin Lewis and say, hey, what do we need to do with you to perform better in the playoffs? Because this was just bad. It was a straight old beatdown. 26-10, Indy now goes to Denver. Cincinnati goes home for the fourth year in a row with nothing but a loss in the playoffs. One and done again. Just cannot feel good for the Cincinnati Bengals. So, there you have it. Just one more game to talk about. I'm not going to say much about this game. The Dallas Cowboys beat the Detroit Lions 24-20. I know everybody wants me to talk about the flag that wasn't a flag. I think I've been pretty clear on what the officials saw and why they picked up the flag. It was a mistake that the head official announced the penalty and then didn't go back and announce why the flag was picked up. There, I think, was the mistake. I think the mistake was that he announced it before he let his crew get together, and the head linesman wasn't able to come up and say, look, this is what I saw. I don't think it was the contact was initiated by the defender. It was initiated by the offensive player. And if anything, now that I've seen the play over and over, because trust me, I have seen the play about a skajillion million times, all right? I know that's not real, but it's a lot of times. That's how many times I've seen it, about a skajillion million. And looking at it, one, you can call defensive holding on Hitchens earlier in the route when he kind of pulled on Pettigrew's jersey. But as far as the face guarding, you can't call that, because face guarding is a penalty in college. It's not a penalty in the NFL. And he didn't initiate contact. What you haven't seen, if you haven't seen the reverse angle, is Pettigrew pulling and yanking on Hitchens' face mask. Nobody is talking about that. Nobody, not Pereira, not Blandino, none of the officials that have broken down this play have talked about Pettigrew yanking and pulling on Hitchens' face mask and then putting his hand on Hitchens' helmet and pulling on his helmet. There's the contact. That's the contact I saw. I didn't see Hitchens contacting Pettigrew. Pettigrew was the one who initiated the contact. Therefore, there's no penalty because he didn't stop. Have Pettigrew stopped to try and catch the ball and Hitchens runs him over? Boom. That's a flag. He kept running away from the football. The football hits Hitchens in the back. The contact is initiated by Pettigrew yanking the face mask, pulling the helmet, and then falling down. That's the contact. One official saw that clearly, said, no, there's no contact worthy of a pass interference. Yes, everybody missed the holding that happened about 4 seconds earlier in the play when Pettigrew first went out in his route, but nobody called that. Everybody's worried about the pass interference. At worst, I think there should have been offsetting penalties. There should have been a defensive holding on Hitchens earlier in the route. There should have been offensive pass interference or illegal hands to the face for Pettigrew yanking on the face mask of Hitchens that nobody is talking about. And that is it. And then I just want to also go on the record and say, come on. There were horrible calls on the other side of the ball. The holding on Witten that negated the Murray touchdown? Unreal. That was the worst. Based on that call, you could have called holding on the Lions on every single play. Then the cornerback for the Lions pushes Terrence Williams into another defender, and they call offensive pass interference? What was that? They were just really bad calls on both sides. And for anybody to say that there's a conspiracy, that because Dean Blandino was on the Cowboys team bus and he shared a little ride with the Cowboys, he is on the Cowboys payroll, and that's why they picked up the flag, because they want Dallas to win. Come on. The Lions were still winning at that point. It was 20-17. There was still 8 minutes and change in the game. That did not cause the Lions the game. At worst, as I say, it's offsetting. You run it again. But on 4th-and-1, they had a chance. They didn't go for it. They lost their gut. They lined up to go, but they didn't go. They tried to pull Dallas offsides. They didn't do it. And then, by the way, I'm sure that penalty affected the punter. He got scared, and the punter became Shankopotamus and punted a 10-yard punt. Gave Cowboys great field position. Oh, yes, then also that penalty, it affected the Lions' defense on 4th-and-6 when the Cowboys went for it and Tony Romo hit Jason Witten for a 21-yard gain. Yes, that one penalty, it affected all of those plays. Come on, people. Game over, 24-20. The Dallas Cowboys win. Haters gonna hate. That's because that's what they do. All I'm saying is that final drive, Dallas Cowboys, Tony Romo, he grew a lot in this game. There were times where I thought he was going to throw the ball, and I even yelled, "Throw, Tony," but he didn't because he was like, "I wasn't sure." He even said after the game, "I wasn't sure if I could make it in that window, and I didn't want to make a mistake because it was such a close game. I couldn't cause a turnover right there. I decided, you know what, we'll live to play another down." He took some sacks that were pretty awful, but you know what? He learned. He learned not to make a mistake. He finished the game with no mistakes. Then at the end of the game, you've got the rookie, DeMarco Lawrence, and Lawrence picks up a fumble after Spencer sacks Stafford, and Stafford fumbles, and Lawrence picks up the ball. And that's the game. All you got to do is fall in it. Why are you picking it up? He picks it up, tries to scoop it up and run. He gets he gets stripped, and he loses the ball, and Detroit gets a 1st-and-10 after a change of possession. But in the end, on 4th-and-3, with the game on the line, the rookie made a spectacular play, sacked, stripped, fumbled, recovered the fumble, all on the same play, and sealed the victory for the Dallas Cowboys. 24-20, Dallas now goes to Green Bay, and Detroit has to go home. The other thing is the Lions had leads of 14-0, 17-7, and 20-7, and they let all of those points slip away. They only scored 3 points in the second half. They played pretty good, but not good enough. And so there you go. That's all I've got to say about that. The Dallas Cowboys get another victory in the playoffs, the first since 2009, and only their second in a whole long time. But now they get a chance to go out, and it's going to be an interesting game when you have the Green Bay Packers, who are a perfect 8-0 at home this season, and you have the Dallas Cowboys, who are a perfect 8-0 on the road this season. Something's got to give, and that's going to be a great game. I cannot wait to watch it. Folks, thank you very much for listening. Gareth, I just got to tell you,
I am the smartest man alive!
Thank you for putting your picks up against me. If you want your divisional round picks to go up against me, make sure you send me an email, steven@rarn.net. Follow the show on Twitter or on Facebook. Go to www.nflrandr.com. That's nflrandr.com to get all of my Twitter handles, Facebook handles, Instagram handles. That way you can follow along and questions that I put out there for folks to answer and stuff with images. make sure you get out there and check them out. And you can also check the challenge game so you can see how we got to we are with a current score of 10 for me, 8 for the fans, all of the games week by week. You can see which teams came through for me, which teams did not. And that is all out there on the website, www.nflrnr.com. Also, to all you show donors, I've got a couple things that are going to be coming out to you shortly. Make sure that you are looking at your inboxes. A few of you have made some very generous donations over the last several weeks. I want to thank you guys individually. I will be sending you an email as well. That is really nice that you guys keep me on the air because I love to continue to do this with you guys. I'm very excited. I can announce finally that the Super Bowl is a goal. Not only will I be on Radio Row for the entire week of the Super Bowl, I will be there the Saturday before the Super Bowl to be a part of the Pro Bowl. I will be covering the Pro Bowl for the first time ever, and I will be there in Arizona all week covering the game, doing stuff for Sky Sports, and hopefully in a few weeks I'll be able to have a couple more announcements about what I'll be doing there in the Super Bowl as well. Once again, you've been listening to Steven Miranda, and this is NFL Rants and Raves. I'm out.